Welcome to the Millennial Joe podcast, where we discuss all things grief, trauma, loss, joy, victory, and healing, based very matter-of-factly on my life. And today, we are going to be talking about dealing with the loss of a sibling, but specifically the loss of a brother. So if you heard me talk about this topic a little bit in prior episodes, you know that I've taken the stance that I have not yet properly done all the work to process my brother's death. And although it's coming up on 3 years that it happened, because there was so much going on in my life and so much that happened back to back, this was one of the areas that got suppressed. So in doing this episode and recanting what happened and how I felt on the day that I found out and all of the emotions that came within, it allowed me to not only recognize triggers, but also actively begin to do the work. And I know that it's so easy sometimes, because life just keeps going, to just file things off and be like, I'll deal with it later. But you really do find freedom when you take the time to do the work. So I'm really excited about today's episode. I'm really excited to introduce our guest, because today is really for sure going to bring a lot of healing. So today we are going to be talking to my good sis. First of all, this young woman really showed me what it was like to have a dynamic relationship with someone. Our relationship went through many stages, and she was always a little sister to me. She challenged me a lot and forced my hand in a lot of growth that took place. And I'm really excited to see her now on this side. So I am going to introduce her to you now. Joyce, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, thanks, sis. Thank you for having me. Finally, first of all, I know we've been trying to get on each other's radar for a very, very, very long time now. I do appreciate the opportunity of you having me. And yeah, I'm excited to see where this takes us.
Yes, I am really excited for the healing that comes from this. Specifically, because I know that this topic is something that has really shifted who we both see ourselves in this state of our lives because of. And, you know, we've recently had talks about the growth that's taken place, and I'm just really excited for the direction that we are going. So I'm going to go ahead and get into my story about how this is relevant to me, and then we are going to hear from Joyce. Okay, so before I start every episode, I like to give a trigger warning. We will be discussing topics that are dealing with loss. I am very clear that I am very detailed in the way that I speak, in the way that I tell stories. So there may be some things that we talk about that will be triggering for you. This is your trigger warning.
So I will never forget the moment that I found out that my brother was no longer here. And I was working overnight at the time, and I got a text from my mom that was like, hey, when you get off work, don't go home, come to my house. And naturally, if you get a text like that, you're going to be like, well, you need to tell me more. Like, why? Like, what's going on? And she was like, would not tell me what was going on. And at that moment, I knew that something bad happened. I didn't know what, and I didn't know to what extent, but I knew that something bad happened, because my mom had a history of withholding things from me when I was away or when I was doing something to preserve my feelings while I was getting those things done, and making sure that I can be told things in controlled spaces while, you know, the support of the family was there, which naturally, as a parent, that makes sense. You know, I need to deliver information to my child, and I want to make sure that I'm there to support them. So in the moment, like I said, I knew that there was something, but I didn't know exactly what that something was. So I finished out my work shift, drove to her house, and then she told me that my siblings were on the way. So I'm like, my siblings are on the way. Like, now I know that this is something that is like some actual stuff. Like, it's not just me that she's delivering this news to. So my two brothers arrive, and she tells us that my older brother Jason passed away. And immediately, you know, there was so many feelings, so many emotions, you know, questions, you know, the whys and the hows and all of that. And again, around this time, you all know I had not only been dealing with the loss of the miscarriage, but I had also been dealing with the loss of my husband and my dog in the car crash. And again, that number of 18 months popped up because this happened in June, 18 months after losing my husband. So it was like those feelings replay of loss, those thoughts replay of losing someone, but also losing myself. And the only response that I had in that moment was to shut down. I looked back over my social media the days around when all of that happened, and I was just as bubbly as I could have been. I was smiling. I looked so happy. I masked it very well, disguised it as healing, you know, glowing through it. But on the inside, I was numb. Like, it was easy to smile because there was no emotion. It was easy to show up on social media because I wasn't covering anything else up. It wasn't like really internally being upset and then like struggling to smile. Like, no, I didn't feel anything. So I was like, smile. Okay, cool. It was the Band-Aid on top of the wound. And I wore that Band-Aid well for a very, very long time. And then in the midst of dealing with that, literally months later, I found out about breast cancer. So it was like it was always just on to the next thing for me, and it was easy to just push that one to the side. It required too much. It required me to deal with things in a different capacity. It required me to dig into family structure. It required me to tap base with my siblings, with my parents. It required too much. And it was a lot easier to just be like, I'll deal with it another time. So here we are. I have this idea to do a podcast. And I know that on each episode of this podcast, I have to deal with it. And how do you just deal with something for the first time in front of listeners? Well, I mean, you just do it. But it's really had me the last few days, like, my spirit a little unsettled, not gonna lie. Because I'm tapping into things that I refused to tap into before. And I believe that, you know, God will have you do things when you're ready to do them. And having certain conversations with certain people and researching certain things that I've been researching, I think I may be at that point. So I'm really interested in hearing the progress that Joyce has made in her journey, because although I'm her big sister, I learn so much from her each day. Because in all of the healing that I've had, in all of the growth that I've taken, this is a particular area that I don't have expertise in. So I ain't got no tips for y'all. Just keeping it honest. I don't have the tips. I don't know the things to do to grieve the loss of your brother, because I'm not there yet. But what I do know is I've watched Joyce battle through these last few months, and healing looks great on her. So Joyce, how are you, love? Are you ready to share your story?
Yes, I am ready. I'm here to be a vessel as always. And again, my healing and what I do to heal looks different, but I do have just some key major things that has worked and is still working. So yes, I'll start with just the day that it happened, the day that I found out. It's two parts to the story, because this incident happened in July of last year, and he didn't transition until August. So it was a very dire process within those months. But 7 o'clock a.m. Eastern time, 6 o'clock St. Louis time, where my family is from, where my brother was, I had just gotten to work. Literally was just sitting down in my seat, and my mom called me. And the first thing she said was, "Are you sitting down?" You know, when you hear that, it's just like, okay, do I need to? And if I do, what's wrong? Like, what's wrong? My mom has dealt with grief and death closely for so long. The calmness in her voice scared me, because she didn't sound frantic. She didn't sound angry. I feel like obviously it was to make sure that she wasn't transferring that energy onto me so that I can remain calm. But complete calmness in her voice. And I said, "Yes, what's wrong, mom?" And she said, "Your brother was just shot. And I'm heading to the hospital." And that was all really the information that we had, because by the time she got there in the emergency room, they had him on a blackout status, to where no one could see him. They had to, you know, keep him sedated and make sure that he was well enough to see and be, you know, transferred to a different room before they even allowed her to see him. And so that next day, she was able to see him. And it wasn't until the third day of his incident that we were made aware of just what his life would look like outside of the surgeries that were required. And what was expected in his life expectancy. By that third day, again, I'm still going to work, because being 12 hours away from home, it's not much that I can do, especially because there weren't many answers that we had, and he was still alive at that point. By that third day, we found out his true condition. We found out that he was paralyzed from the neck down. He couldn't speak. He had a blood clot in his neck. The gunshot wound was actually entered in his neck, which damaged an artery and caused a blood clot. They were able to do surgery and remove the blood clot, but he still wasn't able to speak or eat or anything. So the only thing really that he could do was open his eyes and, you know, turn his head yes or no. But that was it. And they told us that if he was to survive surgery from that moment on, then he would have been on a ventilator for the rest of his life, and pretty much in hospice care. And so that is what I was preparing to do. I had just, you know, put down a down payment on my 30th birthday trip to Dubai, and all of that went out of the window, because I was expecting to be able to go home and take care of my brother. Time passed, and my prayer every single day was, you know, God, allow him to be our miracle. Allow him to pull through. As much as me and my family have gone through, and things that I've gone through with my brother in general, I knew that he was going to pull through. Like, that was my prayer. I wasn't second guessing that. And then comes August. Well, before August, there was an opportunity for me to be able to FaceTime him. And, you know, the hospital arranged for me to be able to do that. My mom, in the same breath, was going to the hospital every single day from sun up to sundown, traveling by bus or cab, however she needs to get there to be with her son. The first time I FaceTimed him, he was not conscious, well, he wasn't awake, so I could only speak to him. Throughout that time, though, I knew that I had to make it my goal to bring myself to a space where you didn't hear discomfort or discouragement in my voice, because I knew that all he could do was hear me. And the same strength that my mom had to pull together to make the phone calls to me was the same strength I had to pull together before I was able to see him on FaceTime. And so I'm grateful that God allowed the time from the date of his incident to the day that I was able to first FaceTime him for me to be able to pull myself together. And really all that looked like was leaning into faith. All that looked like was trusting the reality that I wanted. And the reality that I wanted was that he was going to be able to survive. And so FaceTimed him the first time. Like I said, he wasn't awake, but I was just speaking positive to him and telling him I love him. After I FaceTimed him that first time, he started to cold every single day at the same time. 7 o'clock every evening, he would cold. Only once, though. The second time I FaceTimed him, he was awake and he was able to see me. And as soon as he saw me, tears just fell from his face. I knew then that my brother was well aware of his situation. He was well aware of who was in his energy and who was in his space and, you know, who was in his corner. And it made me feel good, but it also hurt because I know that you're hurting. I know that you're recognizing that you're hurting. But on the other end of that, I felt good that you at least knew who I was. And again, still within seeing his tears, like I was able to still, be very positive. And a lot was said, you know, and he was paying attention, but I'll never forget. I said to him, I'm going to come home for your birthday next month and we're going to turn up. And he just started shaking his head no to me. He started shaking his head no. And for the life of me, I had to hold it together in that moment and not break down. But I said it to say, after that time of FaceTiming him, he began to cold every single day, multiple times a day. Fast forward to August, the day after our mom's birthday. This is the first day since July that my mom had not gone to the hospital and she had not been at his bedside, only because she had a knee appointment. And she was exhausted. She went home, you know, and went to bed and took a nap. They had been calling me from the hospital from the time I left work at 4:30 until the time I left after my appointment, which was around like 5:30, so maybe within an hour. They had been calling me, trying to contact my mom and to, you know, identify where she was, because he had been coding that entire day. Nurses were getting exhausted with having to switch shifts and keeping him alive and keeping him stabilized. And for the most part, they were reaching out to just say, hey, like, he's going to let go today and someone needs to get here, basically. Turns out my mom, like I said, was resting. And I had to make calls to make sure that, you know, she was okay for one, but to let her know, like, hey, you need to get to the hospital. Something's wrong. And again, this isn't anything that we hadn't already been dealing with, but now I'm feeling like if it wasn't for those FaceTime calls, you know, maybe he would have held on a little bit longer, or maybe he wouldn't have felt like he needed to give up. But this is just, you know, the devilish thoughts creeping in and wanting you to believe in a different narrative that's not yours and it's not of God. So it was frustrating, but I eventually got in touch with her through my grandfather and my uncle. And I told her she needs to get to the hospital as soon as possible. But the last phone call I received from the nurses within that time was, by the time she gets here, he's going to be gone. I didn't tell my mom that because, again, I'm still holding on to the belief that I want to hold on to. Like, this is my miracle. This is our miracle. He's going to be okay as soon as she gets here. Me wishful thinking, I get home and I just know I'm either about to receive a phone call from the hospital again or from my mom. They finally get there, and it's my mom that calls me next. And the only thing she had to say to me was his time of death, which was 4:39 p.m. that day, the day after her birthday. As soon as she left the hospital, her phone stopped working again. So she wasn't receiving calls on her cell phone. She couldn't dial out on her cell phone. As soon as she left the hospital, her phone started working again. And for me, again, going back to just find, I had to find something that made sense in this entire situation for me. And for me, it was the symbolism in all of it. He didn't want her to be there when he let go. He needed to see my face before he decided to let go. And so as hurtful as I was in those moments, because I was just blaming myself, like, you just had to be so selfish and see him. You just had to, you know, you couldn't go home. Mom told you not to go home, so you just had to see him. You had to make arrangements for the hospital to see him. Maybe if he would have never did that, he'll still be here. But his story was written from the beginning, obviously, but upon him arriving to the hospital and them expressing his condition to him while he was unconscious, not to him, but, you know, around him, to my mother, he heard all of it. And it was his decision to not live a life like that and to not put his family into further anguish and turmoil just because he knew we would have been there. He didn't want us to continue to worry or anything like that. So it was a long 3 months. There are so many dates of significance within the date of his incident to the date of his death that rings still so much very true to me. Certain times I'm going to always hold near and dear to my heart, but above all things, I'm grateful that the way everything happened was still ugly in a sense, but it could have been worse. And so finding just reasons to kind of change the narrative for myself so that I'm not waking up every day angry has been the deepest part of my healing.
I always say there are signs around us all the time if you just open your eyes and pay attention. Like, God is very intentional about, like, the things that he put together down to, like, hairs on people's heads. Like, so, like, when you get that and you realize that, like, there's always a message, it really, like you said, it is comforting. It does empower you to be like, okay, I'm on the right track. When you get confirmation or you see things that pull you closer to where you're supposed to be. So, what are some tips, because, you know, we always give out the 3 tips that have really facilitated your healing or started your healing or you're working on currently that would have you feel like you're operating in the best self you could be right now at this moment?
3 tips. The first one, which is the biggest one for me, was to make sure that I was continuing to be my brother's voice. My brother had a bad history growing up. Obviously, we were dealt the same cards, but made different decisions. And when it comes to our immediate family, for some of them, even up until his dying date, they never really accepted the fact that my brother was changing. They only wanted to see him in a certain light. And I know that for my brother, it became frustrating dealing with those certain individuals, because he can't be the one to tell or make someone believe that he's changed. You know, it's going to have to come from someone that they actually respect. And so for me and my family, the start of my healing came from holding them accountable, including myself, when it came to certain things that we could have done differently or certain support that we could have given him differently, words of encouragement that we could have said, like anything. That came in the form of a poem for me that I read at his birthday memorial. And, it held a lot of everyone in my primary household accountable to let them know, like, we were a part of all of his heartache at some point in our lives. At some point of our lives, we could have chose to make a different decision when it came to how he turned out. Again, he's a grown man, and yes, his decisions were his. But when it doesn't start at home, that support and that love doesn't start at home, and you're picking and choosing who you want to love on in the moment based on the decisions that they personally make in their lives, no, someone has to be held accountable for that. And, you know, it came from a place of, I need y'all to know that I love y'all, and this is in the past, you know, but he still didn't die hearing how he really, how you all really felt about him in a lot of ways. And you feel comfortable expressing it to me because I'm just this ideal daughter who made it out, who was the only one in the family who did something with her life. My brother has a different story than me, but that doesn't mean that he's less than me in any form of fashion. So continuing to be his voice because I knew his heart. And I was the one who was willing to take a chance and listen to him, whether he was screaming or crying, like whatever it was, you know, making sure that I was holding people accountable and making sure that they know his heart now that he has gone, because he can't speak for himself anymore. So that's one. For me personally, movement. I have in the past, when it comes to dealing with trauma, I've fallen into this trend of just sitting still. Just isolating myself and just sitting and just becoming this couch pillow and getting fat and eating bad, like just doing all the things that I'm not really supposed to be doing. But movement, I have allowed myself to move freely, to just dance. And again, that looks like I'm happy, but really I'm releasing. I'm releasing a whole lot. And that has helped for sure. And lastly, being able to talk about the thoughts that I write on paper. I write down a lot of things, and that comes from just inner childhood things that I had to do when I was younger because I didn't have a voice and we weren't allowed to communicate certain feelings. But I've learned that it takes me to a different level of healing when I'm able to speak my thoughts out loud. And I actually just did it for the first time Valentine's Day this year, actually. The same poem that I read to my family on my brother's birthday memorial, I read that at an open mic, and it felt amazing. Not only for me, because I knew that I was healing someone else in the room too. And not only that, I was able to tell my brother's story a little bit more with a grander audience. It felt amazing. You know, I feel like, again, I hear in a lot of ways my brother crying out to I just want to be heard. That's it. For a long time before he passed, that was his biggest cry. And I feel like now I'm his outlet. And so that brings a lot of healing too. That's probably the top three for sure.
So I love the fact that your first tip and your last tip kind of like intertwine, because not only are you able to still be his voice, but you're also sharing your innermost feelings and thoughts and emotions that you said in the past. That's something that you wouldn't have done. And I'm finding in each of these journeys that I'm going on, it takes a little bit of something that you would not have normally done. And as much as we like to think like, oh, I've been around the block, I know what to do, I got this, it's like every time it's gonna take something that you've never done, because to have something that you've never had, you have to do something that you've never done. And a lot of times people don't get the significance in that piece because that's what stretches you. And if this battle only makes you strong enough for the next battle, you need that extra. That's the extra tool in your tool belt. So I love so much that your tips are so fluid with each other, because they're allowing you to express yourself in ways that are not only beneficial for you but also for him. And I kind of want to double back on your number two tip, because I actually know you in real life. So you said movement as in like dance, but I also know that like you've been working out a lot lately, and you know your results is looking good. But I really want to know, like, how has fitness played a role in your healing? Because you know me, I've been a health coach for 8 years now. Wow, it's crazy to say 8 years because it's the longest relationship I've ever had with anyone or anything. But like after 8 years of using fitness as an outlet for me and my healing, how has fitness played a role in your healing?
That's so funny you bring that up because, wow, fitness is something that naturally you want to do it because you want to look good, right? But for me, it has been such a mental relief. Like I go there, I go to the gym, and I'm able to have my deepest thoughts sometimes when I'm in the gym and I'm just focused and I'm zoned out. Just the validation of knowing that what you're doing behind closed doors can show up in the physical essence. Just that whole thing is just amazing to me, for one. But like, I literally am able to go and have mental clarity when I get to the gym and when I leave the gym, because I'm using that time to strictly focus on me. I'm using that time for breath work. How often do we, you know, maneuver throughout life every single day and not take advantage of deep breaths? The gym forces you to take deep breaths, and that forces your thoughts to slow down. And so for me, I know a lot of people want to do it to like look good, feel good, but me, I'm more mental with it. I think that it allows me to really hear myself. It allows me to see into certain thoughts that I'm having and be able to decipher, is this something that's serving me or not? By the time I leave the gym, I know if it's not serving me. And that's something that I write down and I take it away.
I completely agree, okay? Because when I tell you the gym be getting like some of my best days, some of my worst days, like I'm talking about those sweats where I'm crying, but I'm sweating, but people don't know that I'm crying because I'm sweating and I'm just grinding it out and I'm just feeling all of the feels and I'm just like, I really get the opportunity to, like you said, walk into the gym one person and walk out the gym a completely different person. And breath work is not something that I'm intentional about when I'm in the gym. So I'm definitely going to take that on because literally I have the same routine, my warm up, my stretch, like my circuit, my cardio. Like I do the same thing every day, but I could be more intentional, you know, during my stretch to actually just like breathe and release. Because so much can come from just like letting it all out.
Further, deeper into just when it comes to breathing, I allow myself to feel my regrets with my healing and with just my situation in general. All of my regrets are able to be washed clean through my deep breath. Like, there are so many things, like I said, when it came to pointing out the accountability piece, not only within my family, but within myself, there was so much that I regretted, not just from him passing, but his entire life. Like going back to, I remember him asking me if he could come live with me. You know, those are things that those are regrets that initially started to pop up when he first went through his incident, because had he came and lived with me, maybe he wouldn't have ended up in this situation. But you know what? The devil's going to always play with your mind like that. And for me, being able to identify them as regrets and take it away out of my mind, because another thing that I used to do in the past, I used to feel everything, but everything that I felt was valid to me. And it still is to a certain extent, but again, what's serving you? Because if your regrets are not serving you, then yeah, feel them and let them go. But I would feel regrets and hold on to them. And that's what was delaying my healing and a lot of things in the past. And I'm just grateful that, again, like, this is the one opportunity that I feel like I'm able to get right.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of times we have these things that we want to heal, but because they're so familiar and because they're mine, they're my issues, they're my, you know, my regret, my, you know, it's hard to let go of it because we possess it. And when we realize that feelings are just things that pass through, and they're not permanent, it unlocks access to be like, I don't have to hold on to that. That doesn't have to be for me. So I love that you shared that, because they're my regrets. Yeah, I feel them, and I'm using this breath work as an opportunity to release it. Absolutely perfect. So now we have reached the portion of our call called the 2-minute mouthful, where we answer a question submitted by the fans, and I have to do it in 2 minutes or less. Today's question is, what book, if any, have you read that has allowed you to work on grief? And the answer to that, wait, first of all, we're going to start the time now. The answer to that question is a book called The Grief Recovery Handbook. And I actually got that book from a friend, along with a picture frame, for me to put a picture of my husband in after my husband passed away. And that book really has some steps to make my healing practical. There's a lot of stuff out there for healing and dealing with grief that is very theoretical, very like someday-ish, very like it'll be easier when. And this particular book actually had some action items that I could take to have me feel not only supported in what I was doing, but also had me feel like I was taking the correct steps. So that book was a really good book. And then also my church sent books to my house quarterly. There was like a 4-pack grief set. And every 3 months they sent the book to the house, and they may think that it was something that was small, but it was so monumental to me that they kept up with me for an entire year to make sure they were giving me something to support me during my loss. But it actually was beneficial information, and it wasn't like anything that made me feel bad. Because there's a lot of stuff out there that, like, it's supposed to be helping you, but it's like, is this supposed to be helping me, or is it making me more sad? Like, it's not making me feel like I'm getting better here. So it really made me feel supported. And those two things would have to be the books that I read that helped me in my healing. So, Joyce, I just want to thank you again so much for coming on the show today and talking to us, because I really got so many things from your share that I'm going to take on to actively start working on dealing with the loss of my brother. My relationship with my brother was a relationship that was very unique in the sense that growing up, I didn't know him until he was about 16 years old and I was 6. And then he moved away. And then he really came back and reconnected with us when he was 21 and I was 11 at the time. So like always knowing that I had brothers and not really growing up with them, and then getting an opportunity to grow a relationship with them as I was getting older. And then losing him so abruptly at what we feel is a young age, because he was only 40, was a lot. So, you know, to unpack all of this and deal with all of that, I really just want to thank you for being a catalyst in my healing and allowing me the opportunity to learn and grow based on your story, your journey, and how you have taken the stance to heal. You know me, I'm always going to find a platform to share. And the fact that you are sharing more of yourself, but also sharing your brother's story, really, truly, and honestly makes me happy. And I just really, really want to thank you again for being a part of what I have going on here with the Millennial Joe podcast.
It has been such a true pleasure. Again, you are one of the many people that I can watch from a distance and be inspired by. I know it doesn't sound good to say that your pain inspires me, but how you maneuver through life and how you choose to get up from that pain. Like I said, it's something that I aspire to continue to do. And I understand that everything that I go through is for me. Nothing is happening to me is for me. And I understand also that if I don't get through what I'm dealing with right now and all the pain and hurt that I'm feeling right now, I'm not going to be able to touch the next person that's going to need it. And I always want to continue to be a vessel. My life is not mine. My soul is here for a reason. And all I have to continue to do is to remember to maneuver through life knowing that I have a deeper purpose and a deeper mission. And I'm going to continue to allow everything that I go through, for one, I'm going to grow through it. And for two, I'm going to allow it to continue to be just a catalyst to what's next in my life. And so, again, this is just one of the opportunities that I see as being one of those grand scheme of things for me when it comes to being a vessel. And, yeah, the story doesn't end here. I'm sure there's going to be so much more that I'm going to do to have to grieve and heal and different levels that I'm going to have to unlock. But I'm willing to do that, and I encourage everyone listening to this podcast to be willing to do that work, because only great things can come on the other end of that. So thank you again, Kay. I love you so much, and I can't wait to see your face again, girl.
Until next time on the Millennial Joe podcast.